Blog Talk Radio.
Hi. Theory, my famous gelatin mold. Let's make some room in here.
You keep dog food in the fridge?
It's not dog food, it's fresh pet. Real meat, real veggies.
For a dog.
For Hank.
Whatever her name is, it's just wrong.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Donesia, the commissioner of WBNN. For those of you that have been having trouble tuning into WBNN's programming due to phone service provider issues with Metro, T-Mobile, or Cricket, I have a solution for you. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Play Store, download the TextNow app onto your cell phone, choose a phone number, and then you will be able to tune into all of WBNN's programming. I am the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla J. You are now tuned into News Forum, brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia, with host and anchor, investigative reporter, Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, a.k.a. Chinchilla J, better known as the Queen of Justice.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go!
Wait, I don't think y'all ready for this.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go! Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go! Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go!
Hey everybody, this is your girl, Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, aka Chinchilla J, and yes, I am the Queen of Justice. Tonight is Sunday, July 2nd, 2023, the first Sunday in the seventh month of the year. There's only 5 months left for 2023. Tonight on News Forum, my special guest will be Muti Ajamu Osaberu, who spent 42 years wrongfully imprisoned, or should I say, enslaved, in this country's penal institution, which is, of course, modern-day slavery. Muti will share his story tonight, his story of injustice, nightmares from behind and beyond prison walls. Muti was kidnapped from his family at the tender age of 17. Muti was a child deather, as he likes to call it. Find all about his experience behind the wall and now beyond the wall, since he has been free from that slavery institution since June 23rd, 2023. Also tonight, we will meet Razakhan Shahid Wali. Razakhan spent 28 years in multiple federal prisons. Hear his story tonight. And Razakhan also claims that he founded the Philadelphia Innocent Project, but was forced to cease and desist. Find out why, find out how, find out if it's even true, right here tonight on News Forum. Also, Razakhan is now the founder of Nation Times Judicial Research. Find out what that organization does and why it exists. And also, of course, joining me tonight, my dear friend, criminal defense attorney, Caroline Turner, who will be Judge Turner, January 24. Oh, and we will also be discussing the Supreme Court's ruling this past week on affirmative action and other issues. And I also want to hear from you tonight. How can I hear from you? Well, if you're tuned in tonight via cell phone or a landline, press 1 and you will be placed into the caller's queue. If you're listening tonight via the World Wide Web, you must dial in at 516-453-9133 to talk live on the air with me. And don't forget, if you would like to donate to Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition, please do so. As a matter of fact, do so while we're on air tonight. Okay? How can you donate? Well, it's very easy if you have Cash App. The Cash App is $BAVoiceTour. That's $B as in boy, E as in Edward, A as in apple, B as in Victor, O as in Oscar, I as in ice, C as in Charlie, and E as in Edward. T as in Tom, O as in Oscar, U as in use, and R as in Robert. Be a voice tour. Or you may donate via Venmo. The Venmo account is at Be a Voice. That's at BEAVOICE. And if for some reason you have trouble donating via Cash App, inbox me, Chinchilla Jonesia. Chinchilla is with one L. That is CHINCHILLAJONESIA, my first and last name, with a space in between. Inbox me on Facebook, or you may contact me Monday through Friday at 844-642-8378, extension 888. If you inbox me on Facebook, inbox me your Cash App, your Cash tag, and the amount you would like to donate. You can donate a dollar, $2, $3, $5, $10, $50, $100, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever you want to donate to Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition so that we may continue our advocacy work, fighting for the wrongfully incarcerated, speaking truth to power, and exposing injustices in America and beyond. And if you have a business, you can become a sponsor of Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition. But for now, don't you dare go nowhere. Keep it right there. News Forum with your girl. We'll be right back after this. Right the Wrong Coalition and Be a Voice would like to thank sponsor Sound Therapy with Magic Man Peru LLC, offering sound therapy as a form to bring the best instead of the beast out of us. Thank you, Magic Man Peru LLC, for your sponsorship of Be a Voice. Find out how you can also be a sponsor by dialing 844-642-8378, extension 111. Help Be a Voice continue their advocacy work to free the wrongfully incarcerated, to end mass incarceration and child life without the possibility of parole. For more information, contact Be a Voice at 844-642-8378, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. until 7 p.m., extension 111. Be a voice today. Thank you to my millions of listeners worldwide. News Forum with the girl Chinchilla J now has over 23 million listeners. News Forum is a syndicated radio program which broadcasts every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To tune in and listen to News Forum, you must dial 516-453-9133. And if you would like to talk, comment, or vent, or ask a question to me or one of my guests, just press 1 and you will be placed into the caller's queue. You may also tune into News Forum via the World Wide Web at www.blogtalkradio.com. News Forum with Chinchilla J. News Forum is a product of the ONE Dynasty and Ngozi Time Multimedia. WBNN, we are Beverly Nation. While we believe in freedom of speech and uncensorship, News Forum, however, ask you to please refrain from the use of profanity. And while our views may differ in opinion, we agree to disagree. And all opinions and viewpoints are welcomed and acknowledged. News Forum can also be a very controversial program most times, but it brings truth and exposure of injustices that black and brown people face every single day in this country we call the United States of America, which to me is totally divided, not united at all. And my views are not necessarily the views of WBNN. But again, all views, viewpoints, and opinions are welcome. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And again, invite someone to tune in tonight because it may just be what they need to hear.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go!
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The host, the anchor, the investigative reporter, none other than the Queen of Justice herself, the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, a.k.a. Chinchilla J. All right. Hey, hey, everybody. This is your girl, Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, and welcome to another Sunday night. And, you know, it's crazy. We're in the 7th month of the year, y'all. 5 more months left. Jeez, year is almost gone. And tonight is the first Sunday in July, and we have a wonderful show for you tonight. Last week, you guys heard from Muti Ajamu Osaberu. But you didn't hear his story last week. So this week, you're going to be hearing his story. And, wow, wait till you hear it. I mean, this man spent 42 years wrongfully behind bars, illegally behind bars, unlawfully behind bars. Now he's free. And he's been free now for a week and 2 days. So we're going to be hearing from Lucy tonight. And we're also going to hear from Razakan Shahid Wali tonight.
And he listened to the whole show last week, but we couldn't get him on because we didn't know what number he was calling in from. But he has that all straightened out tonight, so we're going to hear from him tonight, and I'm excited. Can't wait to hear what he has to say tonight. And before we get into our show, we're going to also talk about tonight the Supreme Court. And I know a lot of you listening tonight heard about the ruling the other day. And some of you have not heard about the ruling, but you're hearing about it now. You know, they've overturned the affirmative action. And some people may not know what affirmative action is, but it is something big because there's all types of different affirmative action things that have been going across this country forever now when affirmative action was put in place. You know, Jesse Jackson used to fight for affirmative action, and Leon Sullivan and so many others. Of course, Dr. Martin Luther King fought for our rights for a whole lot of stuff, for us to have equal rights. But the Supreme Court's overturning of the affirmative action for educational institutions for people of color, well, for black people, because it wasn't for all people of color before, it was for black people, okay, for them to have access to the same educational institutions, and we're talking about colleges and universities, as the white people had those opportunities. So we were, like, not allowed to attend certain colleges and universities because they wanted to keep them all white. And so it's somewhat like segregation, but it's a little different. And, you know, now we see blacks attending all the different universities now, Yale and Harvard, Princeton, and the whole nine. But back in the day, and even when I was, you know, in college and stuff, hey, there weren't many blacks. But over the years, the decades that have gone by, look at all the blacks now that attend certain universities. And the way SCOTUS wants to portray the affirmative action is like, hey, you know, these colleges are letting black people in that don't deserve to be here, but they're here just because they're black. And that's not the case, okay? So we're going to talk all about that, and we're going to talk about that first before we get into Mutee's case and before we get into Razakhan's story. We're going to talk about this affirmative action because, to me, it's something very big that has taken place. And looking at the country, like, many people approve of it. Like, the approval rate, I think, was like 52% or 57% across the country, and with the majority, of course, being the white people and then Asians. And, you know, it's just crazy, y'all. Because when we look at this, black people, hey, we're intelligent. There's children that have graduated from high school, valedictorians of their class, you know, the whole high school class, even those that have gone white schools, there have been blacks that have graduated as valedictorian, salutatorian, and all of that. And black children, students with straight A's. I was one of them. Straight A's all throughout my schooling, okay? And there's so many others. And they deserve to attend the colleges that they applied for, not because a race card was played or they were the token black, but because of their academic talents, okay? And so for SCOTUS to make it seem like, oh, it's because of the race card, so we're not going to use the race card anymore to allow blacks to attend these universities, okay? It's not about that, okay? And so, and you know, I'm just going to talk a little bit more about this, why it's on my mind, because if we look at privilege, let's take a look at the white students. white students that attend Yale, Princeton, Harvard, and all these other universities that you're supposed to have a certain grade point average, a certain GPA, in order to get into these universities. However, there are so many white students that don't belong there, but they're there because of who their parents are. Their parents had clout and status. Their parents are rich, and they have money to pay these universities. And a lot of them, they have brought wings of the university, added auditoriums or a library or this or that. So they're donors to these institutions. And, of course, the institutions will allow those children to come in even though they don't meet the criteria, okay? They don't meet the criteria, but yet they're there. So let's not play the race card, SCOTUS, okay? Let's talk about white privilege. So that needs to stop. If they want to stop affirmative action, they need to stop with the white privilege. All right, let's take a listen to Bob Marley, our theme song, Get Up, Stand Up for Your Rights, everybody. Much, Brother Earl. Everybody, that was Bob Marley. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. And that's what you have to continue to do in this country is stand up for your rights. Because guess what? If you don't, who will? Okay? And too many of you are always too passive. And I say this all the time. You're passive. And you don't need to be passive. You should not be passive. Speak up and speak out and let people know what's on your mind and stand up for your rights. Be vocal, okay? And, you know, a closed mouth does not get fed. So open your mouth and speak and stop walking in fear, okay? On Saturday, which was yesterday, on Meet the Host, my special guest was Mr. Boston, Jeffrey Sanders from the Boston Chronicles. And it was a great interview with Mr. Sanders. So for those you have not seen that video yet, check it out. Check it out on Mike Test Entertainment TV's Facebook page or on my page. Check that out and you'll be like, wow. And that was such a great interview yesterday. And I tell you what, Mr. Boston is in California, right? So he's on Pacific time. And so it was morning time there, afternoon here. And I want to say maybe halfway through the show, his internet went out. And, you know, sometimes people lose their signal and the internet goes out and then they log right back in. But he did not. And so I said, let me call Mr. Boston. He has not logged back in. So when I called, he was like, you won't believe it. The whole area, the internet was out. They had like an outage. And I'm thinking it was because of what we were discussing at that time. And the enemy was mad. But anyway, we continued the interview with him speaking through his phone. And, you know, I do have it recorded because I do it via Zoom. So I'm going to have to upload the Zoom version so that everyone can hear him clearly speaking through his phone. Okay, so anyway, check out that video, y'all. And before I bring on Muti and Razakhan, I want to mention what happened in Baltimore last night, you know. Crazy, the wee hours of the morning, 28 people were injured. Two people were killed. And it's crazy, y'all. So that was a mass shooting. And this is happening all over this country. It's happening around the world. Things are just out of control. So we want to keep those families in prayer tonight, keep them uplifted. That God will strengthen them and comfort them, and that things will get better. And it's just ridiculous. And we don't even need to talk about what's going on here in Philly, because Philly, we know, yeah, people were shot today, people were shot yesterday, people are getting shot every day in this city, and it's just really ridiculous, everybody. It's absolutely horrible, and we need to work on making changes in our communities. And, you know, now in Philly, there are some groups that are actually starting to step up to the plate. But is it enough? No, it's not enough. We still need more men out on these streets, letting the young people know they care and showing their presence. And Jamal Johnson, SKU, talks about that all the time. And there was a masjid, they were in prayer, and they had a gunman, well, a security armed black guy with an assault weapon out there making sure that nothing happened to the people in the masjid. And Jamal said, well, if they can do that for the masjid, you know, why can't we do that in the communities? Why won't the officials call in the National Guard? Well, you know, a different viewpoint on that, but that's what Jamal wants, the National Guard to come in, because there's still too many people that are dying in the streets of Philadelphia. All right, so let's now talk to Muti. I'm not sure if Caroline is on or not yet, so I don't think she still isn't on, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to bring on Muti, and we're going to bring on Razakhan. We're going to, right now, we're going to, before we get into their stories, we're going to address the issue a bit on, no, as a matter of fact, now, let's do their stories first, and then we're going to come back to SCOTUS, okay, to the Supreme Court a little bit midway through the show. All right, so right now, let's bring on Muti Ajamu Osaberu, everybody. Let's welcome him back to News Forum. How are you tonight, Muti?
I'm pretty good. You want to excuse me? OJ just made me grilled me some chicken.
Say that again?
I said, you want to excuse me because OJ just grilled me some chicken and his finger licking good.
Okay. He grilled you some chicken, huh? His finger looking good. Tell OJ I said hello. Okay, so Muti's eating some finger looking good chicken, like, you know, the KFC and all that stuff. Like, you
no,
know,
no, 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 it's better
KFC.
Than KFC. No,
it's
KFC
better than KFC.
KFC can't
okay.
I tell him you need to
like,
put his recipe on the
hammer. Can't touch this. Okay. All right, well, welcome back to the show, Muti. And, you know, it's so great to have you on the show live because, you know, throughout the time I've known you, we've done shows where I've interviewed you and had you on the show without you actually being on the show live because it was recorded. And interviews with you that were recorded, so people have heard you a lot on News Forum, Muti. So it's good to have you in person, you know, and all that right here where we can talk with no time limit, no 15-minute restraints and all that stuff. So,
yeah, you
see yeah.
The radio?
No, not often.
You look like it. Oh, okay. What'd you say, Donicia?
Oh, you got to pay attention. You can't be talking in the background because we're live on the air, okay? And the producer will get upset. So please stay focused with the show.
I got you.
And everything. I said that, you know, we don't have those 15-minute restraints anymore. We're, you know, 15 minutes is up, and the thing comes on, thank you for calling, goodbye. You know, and it hangs up on us in the middle of you saying something. So that's a good thing. That is a good thing. So let's talk about you. So tonight's topic is nightmares for this segment, nightmares behind and beyond prison walls. We want to talk about your case. So please familiarize everyone with your case, how old you were when you were kidnapped from your family, and all that stuff, and what you were convicted of.
I heard.
Well, they prosecuted me as a child at 17, and I was later tried, convicted, and sentenced to death by imprisonment, which is a term I later coined to aptly describe the finality of the sentence, because they use. Within their court system, they use euphemisms, jargons, and idiomatic expressions to do one thing, and that is to hide white supremacy. Being 17 years old, I was a child, and I was tried and convicted for homicide robbery. I was convicted for allegedly participating in a homicide robbery, and one of my co-defendants, or alleged co-defendant, got caught, and to save his hide, he implicated me as a part of a package deal because it wasn't enough for them to get four convictions. They wanted to get five. And so they threw me in as like a chaser. And he told them exactly what they wanted to hear. Even though what he testified to was contradicted in the record by physical evidence, and it wasn't really a trial. It was basically exercising assembly line injustice. The trial was only 2 days long. My trial prosecutor, that wasn't even a slip of the tongue. My trial defense attorney was actually a closet prosecutor, another term I had to coin to aptly describe the crimes being committed against black and brown people in the court system. And she worked what a trial prosecutor, what a closet prosecutor does is they work in lockstep with the prosecution, not only to secure the conviction of the accused against the accused, but once it is secured, they work in lockstep with the prosecution to maintain that conviction on appeal. The case law is replete with examples of such conduct, legendary. And it's amazing how it's like defense lawyers are responsible for more convictions in the city of Philadelphia. They're responsible for more convictions than the damn prosecutors are. The prosecutors got 80 and 85 and 90% conviction rate, but many of the closet prosecutors have like 100% conviction rate. How is it that you have 100% rate of failure keep getting appointed cases by judges? And that's simply because they want to feed the machine. Earlier, I heard you say something about mass incarceration. Well, that's the wrong word, sis, because in order to put somebody or masses of people in prison and to make it easy and palatable to the masses, the first thing you have to do is criminalize those people. And that's why Dr. Chauncey McIntyre in her tome, Criminalizing the Race, laid that thing out for us. And so we need to be talking more about criminalizing, mass criminalization, because that is the precursor to so-called mass incarceration. And if we don't, we do ourselves a disservice, because Negroes like Obama can come on and talk about mass incarceration, but still have the insinuation that something is genetically or morally wrong with black people, which is why we find ourselves in these neo-concentration death camps all across the country. But when in fact the problem is in the system of itself, this country, the system, the court system, it, not just the court system, but the entire system was created to the violence of white supremacy, and it is maintained by the threat of the violence of white supremacy. And so me getting caught up in the mix for homicide robbery, I was just one little individual in scores and scores and scores, hundreds of thousands of sisters, children, female, girl children, boy children, women, and men. And after I was convicted, I was sent to Holmesburg Prison. And after Holmesburg Prison, I was sent to Camp Hill, or Camp Hell, as we call it. And then from there, I was what they call classified. Basically, is where they give you your brand. Just like on the plantation, they burn the mark of the plantation in you. Well, there they burn station, which is a prison number. They burn it into your mind. And then from there, I did 7 years, and there were quite a few rebellions up there. Most people only know about the big one, but there were two or three before that. And then I got kicked out of that prison for my human rights activism, and they sent me to neo-concentration death camp, Grady Ford. And I stayed there for 15 years, and then because of my human rights activism, they kicked me out of that camp, and they shipped me up into the mountains on a prison on top of the joint called Hotsdale, which we call Hellsdale. And I stayed there for approximately 9 years. And then, like in every other instance, when they got tired of my human rights activism, they kicked me out of that neo-concentration death camp, and they sent me to one called, that's Rock with three Ks. That's R-O-C-K-K-V-I-L-L-E. And also, I always talk about how Malcolm used to talk about how we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. I like to say that I didn't land on Rockview. Rockview landed on me. And after about 5 years there in that neo-concentration death camp, I was kicked out of there for my human rights work, and I was sent to neo-concentration camp Frackville, and that's Frack with three Ks, F-R-A-C-K-K-K-V-I-L-L-E. And from that time, and all the while, I'm being sent to these different plantations and shipped out along with my, you know, in lockstep with my human rights activism, and always keeping my eyes on the prize of my liberation. And finally, as you well know, on June 6th, 23rd of this year, I walked out the prison doors. Not necessarily a free man.
June 23rd,
yes. And not necessarily a free man, but the dog leash is just a little bit longer.
Yeah. So now, Mooty, now, while you were in the, let's call it the plantation, okay, Mind Day Plantation, while you were there, now, I know you helped a lot of guys get out of prison. So tell us about that, because you were you were basically a jailhouse lawyer. And how many people did you help get out of prison, and how did you get them out?
Well, first of all, I despise that term, jailhouse lawyer. this is how I'll put it. I was a lawyer who wasn't sanctioned by white people. And I'm self-taught. I can't tell you how many people I got out of prison. The number is extremely high. And I've litigated from small things like resentencing, reconsideration, sentence modifications, to things like murders and capital cases. And the more I studied the law, or as they say, they call it practice the law, the better at it I got. And the better at it I got, the more people I helped. And it was an interesting dynamic, because for the first 28 years of me helping people, I never charged anyone a dime. But what I noticed, though, that if the people who you're working for, they don't pay you, they tend not to really value what you do. They will take money that they can save to help finance the war chest to win their freedom, and they will basically squander them on things that have nothing to do with their freedom. And so what I started doing was, after about 28 years, I started charging them. And when I charge them, they wouldn't give the money to me. I would have them find an elder on a block, and I would go to the elder and ask them what they needed. And so once they told me what they needed, I wouldn't even tell the client that I went to the elder, and I would go back to them. And the first thing I would ask them first is this. See, because you got to really, you know, unfortunately, in my experience, our people don't really respect the intelligence of our people. They don't really respect, I'm speaking in general now, collectively. They don't really respect the intelligence of our people. They don't really respect the grind of our people. They don't respect the dedication to a trade or skill of our people. And most times they're looking for a shortcut. And so when I was dealing with folks and not having them pay, the moment I started charging them, I let them know from the rip, listen, you can't afford me. That's first and foremost. So get that out your head. Because what I notice is our people tend to pay somebody something and think that because they pay them, they can talk to them any old kind of way. A dude will pay a lawyer like $90,000, and he get a first-degree conviction. So you just gave him $90,000 for nothing. And I say, well, if you're gonna pay him $90,000, and I gotta reverse the madness that he did, you're gonna have to pay me double that. And now, can you afford that? And most times they say no. I say, okay. So now that we established you can't afford me, now let me tell you what you can do in order to get my services. And I would tell them, say, listen, is the elder on the block? And I say, what is your freedom worth to you? And most of the time, they always try to avoid answering that question. They be like, well, what does it work to you? I said, no, brother, we're not going to go back and forth with this. How much is your freedom worth to you? And a lot of times, some of them have money, and they're real frivolous with their money. They go to commissary every week, buying these big Santa Claus bags of stuff that don't mean nothing. They don't buy office supplies. typing papers, typewriter, erasers, and envelopes, and prepaid posters, things that can be utilized to secure their freedom. They buy a bunch of frivolous stuff. And so I watch them first. Even they can't come into prison and just come to me and ask me to help them. I watch them for like a month and a half, and see how they rock. If they somebody that like to stay in the face of the oppressor, I'll turn them down. If they're young and they playing with the oppressor, I'll give them a shot. But I have to read them the Riot Act first, and then give them like 2 weeks out, you know, not hanging in the face of the oppressor before I take their case. And so once they understand that they can't afford me and that I'm going to do everything I can, and I don't give them no guarantees. Ain't no guarantees that I could do everything that I can do, the best that I can do, that I'm still going to win. And it's not because I haven't put together an irrefutable argument. It's just that the people we dealing with, they have the power, and you don't know how to represent yourself like me. And oftentimes, they would get in court. The judges and the prosecutors would see the work, and they would admire the work, but they would probe the individual to determine whether or not he wrote this or somebody else wrote it. And the moment they found out that he didn't write whatever the presentation is, that's a wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would try to teach them how to do is say the least and just act like you know what you're doing. And the less you say, the better off you be. And most of the times it worked.
Okay.
I can give you so many case scenarios of people that I got out that would never have gotten out had I not represented them. And it's kind of interesting, too, because many of them, I don't know if you read scriptures, but I always liken their situation to the situation with Joseph, where Joseph had talents. He was enslaved at the age of 17 and shortly thereafter put in prison at the age of 17 for a crime he didn't commit. But Joseph had a talent. It was to read dreams. And he met some prisoners in prison while he was in prison. And they was having dreams, and they couldn't get no sleep, so they went to Joseph and said, "Yo, man, like, could you tell us what these dreams mean?" And he would break it down and tell them what it means. And he said, "This, you have to do this, that, and the third, and if you do, you're going to get out of prison." And they would go do this, that, and the third, and they would get out of prison. And he did it to countless prisoners. But soon as they would get out, the scriptures say they forgot his name. And that's not a passive thing. That's a deliberate thing. Because to them, Joseph was no more good to them. Because they didn't need Joseph anymore because they had got out of prison, they ain't telling nobody about Joseph. See, they could have got out of prison and told people about Joseph, and those people would have helped get Joseph out. Joseph wouldn't have to did all the time he did, but they didn't really care. And then the Pharaoh had nightmares or dreams, if you will, or nightmares in this case, because that's the topic of the show. And none of his court members of his court could interpret the dreams. And so these for lack of a better word, these ex-prisoners who wasn't nothing but parasites, they was working in the Pharaoh's court, and they thought of Joseph, not because they wanted to get Joseph out. They thought of Joseph because if they brought it up, they would solve the problem of the Pharaoh, and that would ingratiate them with the Pharaoh, and they could get bigger crumbs off the Pharaoh's plate. And so they mentioned Joseph. They said, "We know somebody that could solve your problem." And they was like, "Well, who is it?" And then they told him about Joseph. They got Joseph out, went and got him out of prison, and we know the history, we know what happened after that. So I experienced that firsthand. It's been a sojourn, and it's been vicious.
Wow. And, you know, that's so interesting, you know, because that happens a lot, Muti. You know, people help people, and then people forget about the people that helped them, get to where they are, get out of situations, and looked out for them, and it happens all the time, and it should not be that way. So you have done an excellent job, behind the walls, and, you know, now you're out, and you're going to do even greater things. So it's definitely wonderful that you are out of that hellhole and that you are now out here in Philadelphia. And you said that you're free because you're no longer locked up in that institution, and you can talk as long as you want now, stay up as long as you want, if you want, go where you want. But now let's talk about this for a moment. So we know that you were wrongfully incarcerated, wrongfully convicted, and you spent 42 years behind bars wrongfully. And you have not been exonerated yet, but you were paroled. So let's talk about that because, you know, this is what's happening to a lot of people now. They're being paroled and instead of exonerated. So now will you still fight your exoneration because you are innocent? So how does that work now that you are out and you're paroled and not exonerated?
Well, I'm still fighting court, right? It's not just like my freedom or my the extension of my leash, my dog leash. Just like it wasn't a matter of if I was going to walk out some doors, it was a matter of when. And it's the same thing with my exoneration. Now that I have access to more resources and I can get things done in a much timelier fashion, it's not a matter of if I'll be exonerated. It's a matter of when. We have the evidence,
yes.
We have the facts, and we have ample
yes.
examples of my illegal
yes.
conviction. So
exactly.
So I'm still – so that's going to happen. Now, in terms of
all right.
my,
awesome.
being paroled, that we made history because they denied me parole twice, even though I had fit the criteria. I had what they call a prescriptive program filled to the – to the top, no misconduct, and everything that I'm that's required for me to do, so-called checked off, you know, whatever the 15 boxes was. The prison supported me for parole because basically they wanted to get me out their hair. And so all of those things, but the parole board still denied me, and then they did it twice. So then I started engineering a class action suit for black and brown people. Because we noticed that white prisoners, they didn't check off all 15 boxes. In fact, very, very often they didn't check off nothing but two or three, and they still was getting paroled. And so we engineered a class action, knowing fully well that in the past when you sue the parole board or any other type of entity like that, and you do it dolo, that is single, they'll settle, let you out, and then go back to business as usual. So that's why we made it class action. So even if they try to bribe some of the class members, the others who are similarly situated will still benefit. We made history with it because I maintain my actual innocence. Everybody and their grandmother
right.
told me not to do it. Everybody. And like if you get a chance to read some of the appeals that I filed against the parole board, I didn't hide. I went right at them. I told them, I said, first of all, you know me and I know you, and you're a vicious white supremacist entity. You are the last hidden bastion of white supremacy, and here's what you do. And I laid it out, and I said, we're going to rumble in court, plain and simple. Talk real rough to them.
Right.
And I met it. And so their position was okay.
Right, and that's good. That's what, you know, a lot of people back down and don't speak, you know, the way they want, and they will say whatever they need to say. But that's good because, yeah, you didn't commit a crime, so there was no remorse for you to show, which they
Absolutely.
Want people to check that box for remorse. But
Absolutely.
They, last, about a year and a half ago, they changed that where people don't have to show remorse if they're maintaining their innocence. And as a matter of fact, there's a guy named John N, who his last name is spelled I-N, who was actually exonerated and he experienced that same thing. And I'm trying to remember John N's story. It may not have been John N. It's someone else that was paroled, though, that I interviewed.
Oh, you mean John N, I-N-G-E?
No, no. No, that guy you're talking about is named James N.
Okay.
I-N-G,
okay.
But John is, okay. His last name is I-N.
Okay.
He was just, it was a few guys that just got out over the past couple months, like in May and I think in the month of April, and they were paroled, and they did not check that box either. So they didn't show remorse, or, you know, they maintained their innocence. So now they're still fighting for their exoneration. And even now with the commutation board and the pardons, you know, well, with commutation for people's sentences getting commuted, now they no longer have to, you know, express remorse either if they're maintaining their innocence. So they've changed a lot of things, you know, with different legislation and stuff, and you know, different people fighting for those rights of people that are wrongfully incarcerated. And, you know, so things are going to get better, because guess what? They can't continue to just keep people in prison for the rest of their lives because they want to continue to make money off of them. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. And there's a thing that that SCOTUS did a few months ago where now they're trying to have it where people that are claiming innocence, where they're trying to knock out certain innocence claims based on certain things. And we're going to talk about that on another show. I don't want to get into that tonight because that's a whole long conversation there of what the different things that SCOTUS is trying to do to block exonerations now in this country, because they see so many are being exonerated now and they want to stop it. And it's just absolutely crazy. It's ridiculous. But let me, I want to bring on Razakhan for a minute so I can get him to share his story. And then I want us to discuss what happened with the Supreme Court this past week with what they've done with overturning affirmative action. I want to get your viewpoints on that, and as well as Razakhan's viewpoints. But I want to bring him on and give him an opportunity to share with us, and then we're going to continue our conversation, Muti. Everybody, that's Muti Ajamu Osaberu, who you just heard tonight. And as a matter of fact, Muti, before I bring on, no, let's do Razakhan first, and then I have something else I want to want you to hear after Razakhan. Okay, so let's welcome Razakhan Shahid Ali Wali to the show. Welcome, Razakhan. How are you this evening?
Okay, thank you. Audhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Well, I'd like to give my greetings. It just simply means I seek refuge in Allah from Satan's curse. But in my heart and mind, I say I seek refuge in the Creator from the madness that we are forced to live in. And I'm truly honored, you know, that you invited me. You know what I mean? Because... a lot of people don't really want to hear the truth, and that's what we try to do. And you want to know what type of a lawyer that I deal with? We deal with constitutional law, and a lot of people jump on us saying that the individuals that made the Constitution were slaveholders, and yes, they were. But the Creator is in charge of all of this, all of us, all mankind. And what is his name, Thomas Jefferson? He was one of the major slaveholders. But he said in a congressional hearing, if there's a God somewhere, I tremble. Because knowing that his justice won't sleep forever. And that's what we're working with. You know what I mean? And most of the time, the problem that we're having is our fault. All these illegal things that these people are doing, Clarence Thomas should be in jail. His wife should be in jail. But we don't press those type of things because that is the Constitution. Yeah. What the Constitution says is no one is above the law. This is why don't nobody argue the Constitution, because you can't. They can make statues and different things and try to make you believe that Congress, I mean, The Supreme Court is higher than anybody, but Congress runs the show if they really did their job. Just like the when they overruled the abortion case, they had no authority to do that. Just like with the this new thing they just did, the 14th Amendment don't say that. You understand what I'm saying? The 14th Amendment tells you equal protection of the law. How you gonna take my tax money and tell me I can't teach my children the truth because it hurts your children's feelings? I mean, that's insanity. That guy in Florida should be in jail. See, those are the things we are not pressing. You know what I mean? But I like the way you wrote up the flyer because everything is subliminal suggestion, subliminal seduction. You made you said that. I started the Philadelphia Enterprise, and I did, but that would make people want to know how and why or what case may be.
Yeah,
and
so
it was
that's
a good
what we're going to talk about. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about because when, you know, when people hear the Innocent Project, you know, they immediately think of Barry Sheck and Peter Neufeld, who started the Innocent Project, and, you know, it was in New York, and it's still there.
That's right.
And Philadelphia did not have an Innocence Project until years after that. And, and it's the Pennsylvania Innocence Project is what it's called. But, you know, when I met you, you said you started the Philadelphia Innocence Project. And the Innocence Project, they, like, you know, tell us about that story because they were upset that you started a Philadelphia Innocence Project.
Yeah, because they were trying, because they dealt with DNA evidence. I'm telling them to deal with actual innocence. And on top of that, send some of them line judges and prosecutors to jail. They say they can't do it. They got absolute immunity. And they don't have absolute immunity. What that law says is as long as they follow the law, the immunity covers them. If they break the law, they have no immunity. And most of them break the law to lock people up. But we don't press that. You know, we got to deal with our history. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I follow to a degree. And what they call what's happening with the courts now, the Nazification of the judicial system. And that's not a coin I phrase. That comes from the Nuremberg trials when they sent all of Hitler's people to court. To trial, hung a lot of them, let a lot of them go because the United States snuck them into America. But I'm just saying, history, if we don't follow it, we are doomed to repeat it. And that's what we got to do. I mean, a lot of people don't like me saying that because when you say something about Nazis, they automatically want you to attribute that to the Holocaust of the Jews. But the Russians lost 27 million people to Hitler. You know what I mean? I mean, we supposed to forget all of that? We done lost more black folks than anybody in the world. But we're not supposed to try to forget that. But I did have a letter from Barry Sack, Peter Neufeld, and Matty DeLong, them telling me that as a cease and desist, but I had been stopped using the Innocent Project. But the thing was, people was telling them because put me with the Innocent Project. They just thought that everything that was happening in Philadelphia was coming from them, and it wasn't. Yeah, we got a whole lot of people out of jail. Constitutional.
What year was that that you started the Philadelphia Innocence Project?
2006. Yeah.
Okay, 2006. Okay.
Innocence Project,
they started in 1992 in New York, and then
they had two clients. In 1995, they had four clients. What happened was Barry Sheck run into O.J. Simpson. He was the lawyer that did the O.J. Simpson DNA trial.
Right.
After
both
that, Barry Sheck now has $25 million a year budget. But when they came here to Philadelphia, they was going to try to act as if we were supposed to be grateful to them. I said, no, you got that wrong. You know what I mean? You better thank O.J. Simpson and give some of that money so we can help some of our people.
Yeah, Peter Nico and Gary Sheck, they were the dream team. So they were part of the dream team along with Cochran, Johnny Cochran. Okay, yeah. And, so in Philadelphia, Philadelphia didn't have an instant project until 2008 is when Philadelphia started the Innocent Project here.
Didn't start later than that because I sent letters to Professor Batt. They used to have a Innocent Project at Temple University. I sent all of them letters in 2006. They said they had no Innocent Project. They was not intended to do no more Innocent Project. And the only Innocent Project they had was in Pittsburgh. That was Professor Bill Moshe. I contacted him. He said all they do was people within 100-mile radius of Pittsburgh, and that left Philadelphia out. And he said, I've looked at some of your stuff. You should start your own Innocent Project, and that's what we did. And that not just me. We got I got 400 people on a mailing list. We got just about a person in every institution in America, including the Virgin Islands, the Virgin Islands Five. Anybody that's fighting for freedom and justice, we're going to try to be with them. And Muti, love you, brother.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. That's good. So now, of course, the Pennsylvania Innocence Project is, you know, it's bigger, and the Innocent Project itself is all around the country, but they're, you know, run by different people, and a lot of them are within universities, or some nonprofits even have, you know, Innocence projects, but all of them are not, like, owned by the actual Innocent Project from New York, because they're all their own entities, really. But they use that name, and now we know how
they
started off.
Yeah, they got to be sanctioned by them, because that's what made me not want to be part of the Innocent Project. And that's what Bill Moshe from Pittsburgh. He was he was a professor of communications, or and his students had already got 9 people out down there. Point Park College of Communications in Pittsburgh. They wanted him to be a part of the Innocent Project, their Innocent Project. But you couldn't lock up judges. He sent 2 judges to jail. His people down there in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah? Oh, well, that's good.
Yes, he did.
That's good. But let me ask you something, Razakhan. Now, what you call your organization, you call it the Philadelphia Innocent with a T on the end.
No. Now we are Nation Time Judicial Research.
No, I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about when you had the Philadelphia Innocent Project, because what you said to me, it was Innocent with a T on the end.
Yes, it was Innocent,
Okay. So, you know, to me, like, if you called it the Philadelphia Innocent Project and not the Innocence Project, I mean, they should not have been able to tell you to cease and desist because you were not using their name, okay? So,
yeah, but when names are similar, courts say that it could be confusing, so they had an argument. I'm not going to spend my time and money arguing with these people because you had a few people here in Philadelphia that wanted me to go up against them. I said, I ain't got time. We got people dying in them institutions. You know what I mean? And every stamp letter I can send, because it was coming out of our own pockets. You know what I'm saying? So we had people to take care of. I just didn't feel as though that was that important, because we're going to still do what we got to do.
Okay, and so now you've gone on to find your another organization. So you're the founder of Nation Time Judicial Research. Tell us about that and what you guys do.
Oh, we just do legal research for individuals across the nation, and we don't charge them anything. You know what I mean? Before we had street people that would donate money, give us money, and guys got out. They appreciated what we did. But now the government has co-opted all these jail institutions, whatever the case may be. That's why they gave Jay-Z, Meek Mills, and Van Jones $40 million to run a project in New York. Oh, they'll give you money as long as you stay in line.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Okay, so now, briefly, just share for about maybe 3 minutes. Now, you spent 28 years in multiple federal prisons, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I first fell, I think it was in 1977, I went to New Brunswick, a little county jail in New Jersey. I knew a little bit about the law then, and I was showing other individuals in these institutions how to fight the charges at the preliminary hearings, because the indictments was wrote up wrong and all kinds of stuff. That's when they was actually, like, trying to follow the law. You know what I'm saying? So these guys was getting off. They wound up giving me something that damn near killed me in one of these institutions, and the whole institution refused to lock up. You know what I mean? Until they took me to the hospital. Once they took me to the hospital, I went from there. For them, that was too much of a power as far as they was concerned. They sent me to Trenton. The guys over there, the warden dogged me over there. So I put up an arrest warrant issued for him. People say you can't do that. But the code of federal regulations says that everybody has to follow the law. Like, I got to follow the law, they got to follow the law. And when I catch them breaking the law, yeah, I had a arrest warrant issued for him, although they didn't serve it. But they had to tell him that the warrant was waiting for him. And the next thing I knew, I was transferred there. They sent me to a nut house. You know what I'm saying? And from there, I went to the federal institutions. But they did me a favor, because everywhere I went, I run into somebody. If I wasn't teaching them, somebody was teaching me. So we expanded our reach across quite a few institutions, which was a good thing as far as I was concerned.
Okay, that's good. All right, so now we're going to take a couple callers, and then we're going to have that discussion on the SCOTUS overturning of affirmative action for black students in America. So let's take a caller right now. Caller, you're live on the Urban News Forum. How are you tonight?
All right. How you doing, Chinchilla?
I'm fine. How are you, Angela? Yes.
I'm just sitting here just listening. I tell you, it's just heartbreaking. I'm sitting here listening to all that you do and to these gentlemen that's been sharing their story, and it just takes me back. Like, this is really happening. I've been working with this guy down in Texas, and Texas is terrible. It is terrible. When I tell you it's terrible, they need your help bad, Chinchilla. They need your help bad. And the guy that was just talking is that he reach around everywhere. They need your help in Texas. I have a man that's been incarcerated for 33 years. He just got a letter from the congressman telling him that they used one of his articles that he wrote to get a bill passed and told him that he needed to go back and file an F-1 for immediate release. Now, if y'all can tell this man that he should be free, he should never have been locked up, but y'all been fighting him for over 32 years, and they just denied him again, gave him another year set off. And it's just crazy, and I'm just over here just like, it just bogs my mind when all these people know that these people are doing wrong, and they just constantly cover it up and cover it up and cover it up.
Yeah.
And then you find individuals, like I submitted a packet to Congresswoman Monica De La Cruz, and she told the office to turn it to send it back, that it was not a federal level case, but just so happened there was somebody in that office that had a heart, and they reached out to me and they wanted to help, and they told me they would work with me off the clock, and they are willing to man, when I tell you, Chinchilla, I need you.
Okay,
I need you.
Send me the information, Andy. Just send me his information and stuff. Definitely. Send me
I just want you to know I appreciate you so much for all that you're doing. I appreciate this show Brother O, thank you for just allowing us the opportunity to do this. Chinchilla, you and your passion for what you do, it made me want to help these people when they reached out to me. All people, they reached out to me, and I've been doing all I could. But I'm telling you,
all right,
they need more than me because I'm just doing what I think I need to do. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just trying to help. But they need bigger help than what I can give. And I'm just thankful to be able to just tune in and to hear the things that you're doing. So just thank you so much. And I'm going to go ahead because I know there's a lot of people that's calling and want to say something. But I thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Angie. I appreciate you, too. Everybody, that's Angela Thomas-Smith, and she's a host on this network, and she is the International Internet Radio Hall of Fame broadcasting nominee for 2023. All right. Thank you so much, Angela. Okay, we're going to take another caller, and then we're going to get back to my guest. Caller, you're live on the air with News Forum. How are you tonight?
You know, I'm doing my best to stay in control of my emotions. How you doing, woman of God?
Good. How are you, Brother Hooney?
Hey, I'm doing my best to stay in control of my emotions because these soulless, you know what? Hold on, man, I be to my pot. I mean, I know it's a little noisy out here. That last brother that spoke is right on time. And what we fail to do is, what we have to do as a people is form a total coalition. A coalition. We got to put aside all of these things that have kept us separated for such a long time. I mean, all of it. You know, and what's so crazy about it, and I have been saying it for over 38 years, and I'm going to take time to say it again. If we have to stop catering to man and mankind's law, because they don't have no law in society, everything that they claim to believe, they contradict themselves. From the Constitution that they claim that they always brag upon, but they always, you know, you got to hold them accountable. And this is something that we have yet to do. Hold them accountable for everything.
Mm-hmm,
and what's so
mm-hmm.
crazy about it, they took all of these years to numb us, deprogram us, and reprogram us to always fight for them, but they don't want to turn around and fight for us with the same passion, the same way that they did with the alphabet crew. And I ain't going through all of that. That's, you know, they're always constantly changing. But look how they got the whole world catering to them, especially over here in the shores of America. We have to do the same thing. My last case in point I want to say is for that 400 years don't apply to nobody but us. And I'm not talking religion. I'm talking about the Creator's law that was put in law long before we got here. But a lot of us claim to have faith, women of God, but they don't want to have faith in what the Scriptures has actually said, because if we do, contest it. So it's not their fault, it's our fault for not having enough faith in what the words say. You understand? Not forcing man and mankind to abide by it, but we got to have faith in what our Creator has already inscribed in us. Now, they don't hide at that so-called Juneteenth. They don't apply to nobody else in the shores of America. That's right in sync with what Bereshit in Genesis chapter 15, verse 13 and 14 have constantly said about it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't apply that to nobody else. And if we were to take time to do this, not only do they have to give it up, they're going to have to give everything back up. I mean, literally give it up, because according to the Scripture, it says that we are going to come out with great substance. We can't come out with great substance if we don't have faith in what the Creator said. You understand? We don't want to apply not man and mankind's law, but the Creator's law. And we was to take time to do this, acknowledge ourselves, there's nothing they can do on earth that can contest that. Anyway, you know I love you. I appreciate all of these brothers. And I'm really, really just personally sick and tired of these soulless, you know what, doing any and everything and getting away with it. But they're not going to stop what they're doing until we put a stop to it. Thank you.
Right. That's right. Thank you so much, Brother Hooney. Thank you. Appreciate you for calling in tonight and sharing what you shared. And Brother Hooney is also a host on this network, everybody. And, you know, he's an enshrinee and all that good stuff and Hall of Famer. Thank you so much, Brother Hooney. Thank you. All right, we're going to get back to our conversation now. And I'm going to bring Muti back on. And Muti, I want to want you to hear something really quick, and then we're going to talk about the affirmative action because we got to address that. So take a listen. Muti, are you there? Muti?
I'm here. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Just want to make sure you're still there. Okay, so I want you to take a listen to this little clip for a moment, okay? So let's listen to this clip from January 2023, everybody. Let's listen to this.
Okay, so, Muti, with this year, new year of 2023, tonight's theme is New Year Kickoff. 2023, the year to be free, free, free. How does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I mean, it just warms my heart, my spirit. It puts me on fire because this indeed is free, free, free. That makes me think of the last poet. Freedom is waiting. Freedom is waiting. Right now. Freedom is waiting for every man. Come and get it if you can. Right now. Right now. So that's what resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
And just think that we got cooking. I can't go with you. I don't want to be him. But the stars is lining up for us. All the hard work that we've done is coming into fruition. And the likelihood of me hearing it much sooner than later is extremely strong.
What you said about the, you know, Kwanzaa being something to be every week with the seven principles. And every day this week I put out a little video clip for that particular principle of the Nguzo Saba and talked about it. And that is my belief too. If people would apply these principles to their everyday life, you know, you were so right. And that's part of tonight as well, because they have a brief lesson on the seven principles of Kwanzaa tonight. And I put on there a brief lesson on the seven principles of Kwanzaa and how they can impact your life. So that's awesome that you said what you said about Kwanzaa without even knowing that, you know, I had put that in the topic for tonight as well, because it is important. Those principles really mean something. They mean a lot. And so I'm glad that you see it that way and that you and Mama Rise are talking about, you know, having that happen, where you guys are doing that every week, every week. And that's what we need to do, instill those principles each and every week. So that's right on point, Muti, right on point.
Counterbalance is this. Now check it out, Doc. If we're not giving them those principles, then what principles are we giving?
Right.
Because I'm going to tell you, this society has principles, or if you want to call them that, not necessarily principles, but they have something for them to latch on to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all destructive.
Right.
It's all self-destructive, and it all represents perpetuating the insanity you see running rampant, not just through our community, but through the whole country,
mm-hmm.
City to city, state to state, county to county, you see it running rampant, and clearly they don't have the solution. So
right.
We have to, in the spirit of the Mendu, or as most people refer to it as Sankofa, go back and fetch it. That which was stolen from us, that which we lost, that which we dropped, we have to go back and get it, and once we get it, we can reapply it. And live it in our lives, and we'll see that that puts us at an advantage every step of the way.
Okay. Yes. That's awesome. Now, with these seven principles, which did you find as the most important?
That's a good question. My favorite, my first, everybody has their own personal favorite and for their reason. But my personal favorite is the second principle of the Ngusu Saba.
Okay.
Ngusu.
Okay.
Principle Saba means seven.
Yes.
It's the second one.
Coach Chakalian. Okay.
The reason why, and it goes, self-determination is we deserve to speak for ourselves, name ourselves, instead of seek for ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, instead of being spoken for and named and created for by others. And everything starts with the naming process. For the folks who read scripture, whether you read the Torah, the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, or any of the other scriptures, particularly the book Becoming Day by Fourth, which is older than all of those scriptures I just cited. When you read scripture, most of the scriptures have an agreement on the importance of self-determination. And most of them have an agreement on naming things. And to name something is to have dominion over it.
Mm-hmm.
You can create or you can tear down through naming. Tear down the things that need tearing down, the impediments, and build up and create the things that need to be created through naming. And self-determination, that is Koji Chagalia, is the most important to me because it dominates or dictates how we do all the other six principles. Because of the process of acculturation in this country, we've been robbed mostly of our culture, not everything, because most folks make the mistake and say we was robbed of everything we weren't. But they tried. They tried to rob us of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And much of what we were robbed from, we have to get it back. But we have to reconnect with the past in order to either redefine or reconnect with the proper meanings of words and concepts so that we can live, function, and operate clearly. And so many times we get together as African people, women and men, and we butt heads in relationships, and we, you know, tussling, bustling with one another, and that's simply because we don't have the same meaning of what the words that we're using in the relationship mean. So if I say I love you, and then you say you love me too,
I have 1 minute left,
and then I do something, and you say, well, that's not love. I say, well, okay, well, we need to define what love is, so that we know when we define what love is and when it shows up, it won't be no stranger to us. So we need to redefine what trust is. Like all the other principles, we have to redefine what they actually mean, because the definitions that they've given to us are the exact opposite of what those words truly mean. Remember, in the African language, there are things that Europeans use that we don't even have words for because those things didn't exist. Like there was no word for prison because we didn't have prison in Africa. There's no word for child orphanages because we didn't throw our children away.
Right.
There's no word for old folks' homes because we didn't throw our old folks away.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's no words for that. So we have to create, now that we're in a different space and time, but we still have the same principles, we have to create words for
Thank
us.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Wow, Bluthi, so that was you back in January of this year when I interviewed you. And, of course, you heard at the end, thank you for using Securus. Goodbye. But now we don't have to hear that anymore. But that show that night, you know, 2023, and I interviewed you, we were talking about freedom. You know, I said, freedom is coming, 2023, the year to be free, free, free. And here you are, free, free, free. And so that is awesome, Muti. So what did you think about listening to that show?
Well, I mean, it was nice and all that. We probably could have another show just, you know, breaking down that. But I want to get back to...
Oh, yeah, we're definitely going to break it down. Yes, we are. We are going to definitely have a show to break all that down. But I just want you to hear that, because when I came across that today, I was like, oh, wow, listen to that. Free, 2023. And 2023, June 23rd, 2023, you were free. So that is so awesome. Now, let's talk about SCOTUS with their overturning of affirmative action. So you heard what I said. Like, you know, they talked about blacks
in the morning
getting into colleges and universities, trying to make it seem like, okay, blacks don't belong there, and there are students that feel that way as well. And blacks have earned their way into colleges and universities such as Yale, Harvard, Princeton, and the whole nine, all of the Ivy League colleges now that blacks are attending, even University of Pennsylvania, okay, Penn State. You know, these institutions were, of course, racist institutions that wanted to keep blacks out. And, you know, affirmative action came about, making sure that blacks had the same opportunities educational-wise. You paid a tuition, you should be able to go to that school. If your grades are up to par, you meet that criteria, you should be able to attend those colleges and universities. And so it's not like those universities said, hey, well, we're going to let this black person attend University of Penn. Hey, they don't meet the criteria with their GPA, but we're going to allow them to attend anyway. So none of that stuff took place in Ivy League schools. Every black student got there because they deserved to be there, and they were admitted. And prior to affirmative action, it didn't matter what their GPA was. They could have had straight A's, 4.0s. They could have been on all types of educational teams, debate team. They could have been president of the school. They could have been this and that. It didn't matter to them. They tossed those applications in the trash. And but now SCOTUS wants to pretend like, oh, well, yeah, they only got there because of their race. And that's not the case, you know. And I said, what about white privilege? Because we have lots of white students that do not belong in these colleges and universities, but they're there because of their parents. Their parents who are spending money, donating to these universities, buying wings of the universities, building this and building that, and they have to do that. So they buy their way into these universities, and they shouldn't be there because some of them is dumb as crap. And they have 2.0 as a grade point average, okay? They got C's and D's in school and do not belong in an Ivy League school, but they're there. And it's not fair. So, SCOTUS, you need to end white privilege for whites that are in these universities that do not meet the criteria, but they're there because of who their parents are. Okay, because of connections and money and clout, and that's not fair. Okay, so see, what are your thoughts on this affirmative action as far as the colleges and universities are concerned with blacks?
You talking to me, Doc?
Yes, you're Mootie.
Okay, I'm just checking. That's all. well. I sort of look at it kind of different, because like even like the language you was using, it doesn't really expose what they do. It simply strengthens the chokehold that they already have on us. Like we use terms like race and racism, you know, the word race and all of its derivatives, racism, racist, and racial, all of those are euphemisms, jargon, and idiomatic expressions for white supremacy. As long as you're talking about those terms, you're never talking about white supremacy. And if you write in all of those derivatives, you confuse the reader. If you speak it, you confuse the listener because it doesn't identify who did what to whom. Now, when you say white supremacy, it identifies the culprit and the crime. And there's no doubt of who we're talking about and what they've done. And so we start off from that point. And so what the court has managed to do, the white supremacist court, that was a white supremacist court from its very inception, and it's maintained with the threat or violence of white supremacy, what they have done is that they have created a lexicon and put it out into the general public. And socially, we use those terms and we become socially or emotionally attached to those words, and we use them as if we're saying something profound, when in fact all we're doing is strengthening their chokehold on our community. So we got to take a step back.
Okay,
before we
let me pause you for a moment. Okay, so I use the terminology I use, and you use different terminologies. Okay, let's forget about the terminologies that we're using. What are your thoughts on the ruling of SCOTUS?
Well, if somebody has been following the court's decision, first I want to say this. One of the things that Raza Khan pointed out is that we constitutional scholars. For lack of a better word, we guerrilla scholars. And if you want to know what the Supreme Court is doing, all you have to do is read the Constitution. The Constitution of the United States says that they're judges. They call themselves justices on their own. So they tell you from the rip they don't care nothing about the Constitution. And the precursor for what you just seen with striking down a so-called affirmative action was a case about 8 months ago called Jones versus Mississippi, where the United States, in distinction of all the other nations of the world, the other 193 nations that signed the Charter for the Rights of a Child, United States is the only one that haven't ratified it, but they ruled on Jones versus Mississippi to make it easy to sentence children to death by incarceration and still be maintained as the only nation in the world that practices sentencing children to die in prison, particularly black and brown children. So that was the first shot fired, and I told people it's going to get worse, and very few people listened. And then the next thing was abortion. And then the next thing after that, now, so-called affirmative action. Let me tell you something about white people that practice white supremacy. They, and I'm going to use the word belief because that's in their lexicon, they believe deeply in affirmative action. They've always believed in affirmative action. But affirmative action for them means that white folks get 100% of 100%. And it's only when we fought and kicked the door in and start getting a few crumbs off of any place in this society that all of a sudden the word affirmative action became a bad thing. And so when you deal with them, they're duplicitous. Whatever they say, they don't mean what they say. They mean something completely different. Or whatever it is they're talking about is for them and them alone. Striking down affirmative action. Them striking down affirmative action is really about them saying that we don't want to give you nothing. And it's not even an argument about whether or not somebody is undeserving or unqualified, because that's another canard they use to try to cast aspersion on black and brown people. But it's really about control, domination, and humiliation. They want to keep African people, brown people, First Nation people, and to a lesser degree, Asian people, though in this particular case, they use Asian people as a prop to actually push it, talking all this nonsense about racial this and racial that, when really we're talking about pushing African people out of the venue, whatever it is. It don't matter what genre it is. It could be education. It could be economics. It could be politics. Whatever it is, they want to push of the realm. They want to deny, obfuscate, beat down, and misdirect at every chance. and they use the laws as instruments to bludgeon us or our so-called right into the ground. And so what the SCOTUS did is what they've been doing, making the laws apply only to them. When it's in their favor, they love it. When it ain't in their favor, they misrepresent it or misinterpret it, and then they break it. Because if you're talking about stare decisis, which is a concept that they say they follow, which is that which goes before is stands, if that means something, then how do you take what was already established and then break it? Simply because you don't care. It doesn't mean anything.
Thank you. Thanks, Muti. I'm sorry to cut you off. I want to give Razakhan a chance to chime in on his views of SCOTUS as well, because we're getting near the wire here. So let me bring him on so that he can give his input on that. And I thank you for what you said, how you broke it down with Roe versus Wade and with the Mississippi issue and the different things that SCOTUS has done this year and last year. You know, so, and they're still going to be doing things. They, you know, did the gun law where they messed up the gun law thing and, oh, all kinds of stuff they've done, and they're going to continue. And, you know, it's just crazy. So let's bring on Razakhan. Razakhan, what are your thoughts on SCOTUS, on the ruling of affirmative action?
Well, the courts will be able to do any. Oh, sound like I'm hearing an echo or something. Okay. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, loud and clear. Razakhan, thank you, man. Continue to talk, please.
Okay. The courts will be able to do anything they want as long as Congress does not do their job. They got a law called the Oath of Office, and you got 167 congressmen and 11 senators that had no business voting against the Voting Rights Act that they just voted against. They had no business voting against giving senators, giving Washington, D.C. a state, because they broke the law. And the law says, that's why I deal with the law, but constitutional law, they can't skate around it, so to speak. You know, either they could break it or whatever the case may be. We have never lost the case, but that's all we take is constitutional cases. It says 18 U.S.C. 1918 provides penalty for violations of oath of office, describes in 5 U.S.C. 7311, which includes removal from office and confinement or a fine. Once you declare anything against, when they voted not to seat Biden, that was they violated their oath of office, and they should have been challenged then. We got to go back to civics. You know what I mean? When we was in school, we knew that Congress was the strongest part of the government. Everything has to do with, even when the Supreme Court changes the law, it says in there, they got to include what Congress intended. What evil was Congress trying to remove, or what mercy were they was trying to enact at that particular time? Not whose feelings they was hurting, or what congressmen or senators from down south is going to be offended. It's our fault. That's all I can say. You know what I mean? And that's how we take it. And we're going to fight them to the death. I mean, and we're going to all die fighting. I mean, ain't no question about that. You know what I'm saying? And that quote that I got from the Nuremberg trial, the Nazification of the courts, that's what's going on now. And we can see it. History is repeating itself. No matter what we say about what they're doing and what they can't. And the reason, and I'm thinking, well, we can't talk about the Democrats because that'll make some people not want to vote and might vote for the Republicans or whatever the case may be. But I'm thinking the reason why they don't call out Clarence Thomas about all the money he's getting, because they're going to find out that same guy that's giving Clarence money is giving all them some money. And it's going to come out like that. Why else won't they say it? Here's Biden, his son, but Trump's son-in-law got $2 billion from a cold-blooded murderer in Saudi Arabia that cut up the reporter, and nobody mentions it. Something is wrong with this scenario here. So, I don't...
Unmuted.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much, Raza Khan, for those comments, and you're absolutely right. And those are issues that we definitely need to address because so much is going on. And they're getting away with all types of things, and they're not being held accountable for their criminal acts. And everything they do, it's like they get a slap on the wrist or a sweep under the rug, and that has to stop. And so we have to expose all of them. And the Supreme Court justices, shame on you. Shame on you. And we're going to talk more about that next week, everybody, about the SCOTUS ruling on affirmative action, because there's a lot more to talk about, because I definitely want to talk about each of these Supreme Court justices, the nine of them, and how they ruled. And we're going to find out more about each of these justices and their past, okay? And it's a shame they can stay as a Supreme Court justice for the rest of their lives, and unless they're impeached. So we got to start looking into that, people, because they don't need to be there. They don't need to be there. The ones that need to be out need to be out, and we're going to talk about that next week. Right now we're going to go into Ngozi Times, and I'll be right back. So don't you dare go anywhere, people. Keep it right there. I'll be right back after Ngozi Time.
What you gonna do when you grow up and have to face responsibility? Will you spend your days and nights in a pool room? Will you sell cats of madness to a neighborhood little ghetto boy? You already know. Much pain and misery. Little ghetto boy, your daddy was blown away. He robbed that grocery store. Don't you know that was a sad, sad old day? All of your young life you've seen such a misery and pain. Oh, young man,
right, all right. Wonderful show tonight. Now, before we get into logistics, I want to let everybody know. All the folks that always claim they, you know, are on news forum and testing to show Tranisha, it's called pressing one, okay? Because a lot of times we get little communications. If I don't see you, you don't come on. So I want to hear it. So if you're here, you're supporting Chinchilla J, press one. Also, too, I'm going to say this. To all of our guests that are here on News Forum, especially with the great work that Dr. Chinchilla J has done for a lot of our guests who have come on since 2020 in December, please be ready when you come on the air, okay? There should be no excuses of what you're doing, whatever. This is a broadcast that's, you know, simulcast around the world and sponsored by some great people. We want our guests to be ready and on time. Say, show the same disciplines that you have in life just through 2 hours of work. Please, please, no background talk. You know, respect our wonderful commissioner here and a wonderful anchor and investigative reporter, because she does a lot for every one of you. So give her the time to respect her. And I said what I said. Tonight, we come back, you know, with this wonderful news forum. And congratulations to the doctor herself, Chinchilla J, and her 85th all-time WBNN Connection record, of course, honoring the late, great Darlene Lawrence with the championship. And a lot of things is going on. Special prayers out to Justice Morris Kemp. Special prayers out to Sister Bessie the Truther. Special prayers out to Jerry Petito. You know, they're going through some things, and we want to make sure that we honor them in a moment of prayer. Also, too, and after Ngozi time comes on, there'll be no more callers. Should have called before I came on the air. Should have pressed one before I came on. So try to press, you know, from 9:30 to 11:15, so that could be established and understood. You got from 9:30 to 11:15 to press one. Any kind of suggestions you have for me, you can, you know, text me at lbeverly17@gmail.com. I'm waiting. I've been doing this for almost 10 years. Love and hate mail, I accept all. Again, congratulations to Dr. Chinchilla J, the 2022 Anna Rodell Award recipient for the WBNN Host of the Year, the 2021 recipient of the Sonya Griffin Award, which is the Linear New Host of the Year. Tomorrow night, we come back on the Outstanding Reports, that is WBNN, with a special show. But, of course, tomorrow night, I get a chance to do my thing on the Wheels of Steel and honor the great Charlie Wilson tomorrow night. And I'll be part of Honey Bee's American Songbook tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern Daylight Time, right here on the one and only W Nation. WBNN has advertising through Ngozi Time, Offset Media, Pinterest, Google, Instagram, and Twitter at Ngozi_time. Ola Dali Malaya, Ngozi at Facebook. Anytime suggestions or wonderful program tonight, Ole Day Late, I Ngozi with MyAngina.com. I am your mother and father's favorite producer, Ola Dali Malaya, Ngozi, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in the Armed Forces Radio, support us on a constant basis. I love what Moody said about a name. Because when I changed my name like he did, you know, honoring my tribe, Ola Belly means wealth has come home. What is your wealth? That's the question tonight. What is your wealth? I'm the greatest ever did it. Hey, Doc, man, take us away now.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother L. And I thank all my listeners tonight. And like Brother said, you got to press one before 11:15, people, okay? Because a lot of people say, hey, I want to get on, I want to talk, but you have to press one. And I mentioned that like several times through the intro of the show, and I didn't say it during the course of the show because I forgot, so wrapped up in the conversations. But, yes, press one. So next week, press one so you can get to talk, everybody. I thank my guests tonight, Muti Ajamu Osaberu, and also Razakan Shahid Wali. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Both gentlemen are so intelligent and filled with wisdom, and we're definitely going to have them back on again. Next Sunday is Muti's birthday. He will be the big 6-0. He'll be turning the big 6-0 before me because mine is August 12th. And I want to give a big shout-out to a dear friend of mine, and that is Pastor Francetta Mays, who is the president of the Oklahoma NAACP in Tulsa. Her birthday is tomorrow, everybody. So happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Francetta. Happy birthday to you. May God bless you. May God bless you. May God bless you. May God bless you with many more. Francetta is turning the big 6-0 before me because she will be the big 6-0 tomorrow. All of us were born in 1963. Isn't that great? And Pennsylvania Historical Exoundary turned the big 6-0 in April. So this is great, y'all. A lot of big 6-0s this year. So thank you all so much. And Mo Garman, who's the host on this network, she was listening tonight and driving. And thank you so much, Mo. And all the others that have listened and those of you that were listening over the World Wide Web, thank you so much. And next week, we'll be talking about part two of SCOTUS, the SCOTUS ruling. And I want to remember my grandmother, Queen Mother Adama. Okay, who's no longer with us physically, but she's still here in spirit. Her birthday is July 4th. Happy heavenly birthday to Mother Adama. Love you much. All right, everybody, I'm Dr. Chinchilla J, a.k.a. the Queen of Justice, and you're going to find out how you can donate to be a voice again and how you can be a guest on News Forum. So I'm going to sign off and keep listening and remember to always, always be a voice on purpose. And next week, we're also going to talk about Friday, which was Mootie's one week anniversary. Shout out to Big Beard's Barbershop. Thank you so much, Valentino, for partnering with Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition. All right, take a listen, everybody. Money talks, so put your money where your mouth is. Be a voice today by donating to Be a Voice. Cash App, $, Be a Voice Tour. That's $, BEAVOICETOUR. Be a Voice Tour. Or donate via Venmo at Be a Voice. If you would like to donate via credit card, you must call the Be a Voice office at 844-642-8378, extension 11. Again, 844-642-8378, extension 111. Be a Voice today. If you would like to be a guest on News Forum and have a case of injustice, please give me a call Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. at 844-642-8378 to tell me about your story. And you might just be News Forum's next special guest.